Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach Wendy Dillard here. Today is Thursday, March 29th, 2018, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, your second daily dose of happy for the day. And we had a good start this morning. Joel and I had a great conversation about the importance of talking and telling your own story in the way that serves you best. So that kind of set the mood for today. And I've been telling myself good stories all day, Wendy. I think it actually works.
So is that kind of where this phrase comes in? I'm telling my story and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, that's it. That's right. Well, the problem is that often we stick to the wrong story. That's where it really comes from. But it's like trying to learn to stick to a new story, and it's a little hard to do sometimes. You know, it's hard to switch the storyline around, particularly when you're used to the old storyline.
Well, and it takes practice, because without us realizing it, we practice the old story.
That's right.
And now we got to turn from that and practice a new story. Good point.
That we do. So anyway, we are continuing the Thursday afternoon story, and that's always a happy story here. Wins. Let's see. One of my nice wins for today is that I got everything out of the way. I mean, I had all the stuff that has just been kind of accumulating over the last couple of days, I got it done. And Abraham says we never get it done. Well, guess what, Abraham? I got it done.
Oh, but you know, not to throw anything ugly on your path, something more is going to show up.
And oh,
if rats. I know you, you got it done so you could do something else.
Well, that's just it. Yes, exactly. It's not like I was done for life. Like, okay, I'm closing up shop. You know, window closed. Next.
Really?
No, that's not that.
Well, cool.
Yeah, but I got the little stuff. You know, I got the remember the word niggly? I got the niggly stuff out of the way.
Ooh, that's a good one. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, I love that niggly.
Yeah, so it was a good anti-niggly day. So how's your day been?
I kind of want to, my day's been good, and I want to kind of do a mini recap on yesterday.
Oh, yes.
I shared with you at the end of the show where I was at vibrationally, and it was just really ironic, because if you haven't listened to yesterday's show and you want to hear a really good tennis match between Walt and me, that's what it was.
We had fun.
We literally started out of the gate. He made a comment about the very first word on the topic we were going to discuss in our book, and I decided to go, what is that about? And I threw out a different response. And I mean, the whole show, we pinged and ponged and pinged and ponged. And it actually, I found it very fun. Walt told me that he thought it was fun. By the end, we kind of came to a slight agreement. And, you know, this is kind of where we normally are. We agree. We just use a different word.
Right. Yeah. That's,
you know,
it.
And neither one of us was going to give up the way we
wanted. No, of course not.
We liked it.
Well, that wouldn't be any fun to give it up.
Well, it surely wouldn't have made for much of an entertaining show yesterday as
that's
we did
right.
our tennis match. But something that I had commented on afterwards, you know, when you as listeners didn't get to hear, I said to Walt, I had been with Help Desk, you know, talking to them about something that was just really, they had changed their system. Their system is not very user-friendly yet. And, you know, I've had all these Help Desk tickets for like 10, 12, 16 days that have gone unanswered. And I was trying to find what's going on. And, oh, you put it in the wrong box. Well, how was I supposed to know? Blah, 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 blah. So I was really frustrated just going through this back and forth with the Help Desk people. And so, like, I looked at my clock. I went, okay, I've used up my extra 3 to 4 minutes of buffer time. I've got to, like, walk away from my desk and go call Walt. It's time for our show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so aware. This is the interesting part. I was aware that I was in a persnickety kind of mood. And I knew I could have changed it if I wanted to. And I kind of, it's not like I said to myself, I don't want to change the mood I'm in. It was more like I just didn't.
Yeah, I know that one.
And so I just thought, well, you know, Walt and I have such a good time together. We'll just see where this goes. Surely, you know, once we start reading the book, you know, I'll feel better and, you know, I'll get into my better happy zone. And, well, I didn't. But it did make for an entertaining show. Well, so today, right before the show, guess what? I was on with help desk again, doing the help desk chat, and it was more, why is this not happening, and where did my ticket go? And they said, oh, well, you could track it here. And I said, you're going to tell me go to this URL. I don't have that because it redirects me to someplace where I can't track it. And, you know, he's like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, you know, I don't want to be in a bad mood today. And I wasn't even thinking about the show. It was just in that moment. It was like, I don't want to go down the road of feeling uncomfortable and unhappy and frustrated.
Good for you.
And so I said to the man, I just said, thank you for your insights. I appreciate it. Thank you. But I have to leave now. And so I did. And as I was dialing in to talk to Walt, I just said, okay, Wendy, let's just change this because you have the ability to. And I mean, like within seconds, I flipped the switch and I'm like, oh, I'm in my happy place. All is well.
So wow.
I thought it was worth reporting on that.
Yeah. I just have one question. How do you flip a switch? I can't ever flip the switch. I can kind of get there fairly quickly, but flipping a switch has never worked for me. How do you do it?
It is a very conscious decision that I want to feel good right now.
Wow.
And this is something I have practiced for a long time. No, I have not practiced at using those words, but it's a feeling or a sense, or an, I should say intention. That's a better word. The intention is how I just reflected it in words, which is, I want to feel good right now. I set that intention. I like really lean into it, and boom, I'm there.
Well, then I got to ask you a second question. Do you keep the switch? Do you keep the switch next to your Staples Easy button?
My Staples Easy button.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
Yes, no, that was a good question. But, you know, I mean, there was a time, Walt, I could say I sure want to feel better, and it didn't happen right away, but I do recognize a distinctive difference between once upon a time and now is I set my intention with so much fervency, so much intensity, it's not wishy-washy. Where in the past, it would have been something like, I'd rather feel some relief. It'd be really nice. I don't like going down this road anymore. This doesn't feel very good. Mm-hmm. How do I get to the part that Abraham says, pivot and turn in the direction of what you desire? And it's just really la, 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 la. There's not a whole lot of, yes, it's going to happen. And that's what's been happening in my life really for the last number of months, 3, 4, 5 months now, where I'm noticing that when I set an intention that I want something, I don't do it with that mamby-pamby, wishy-washy energy that I used to do it with. I do it with a sense of declaration, decision, and commitment and intention.
That's very good. That's very, very good. Yeah, that's excellent.
And you know what's cool, Walt? Sometimes I don't even know the answers to my questions until you ask them. And then it feels really good for me to describe it because it's not like I'm making it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you ask the question, I go inside and I pull out what's really there. But it's like, it's a nice acknowledgement even for me. And I promise you, I'll be using that, what the answer I just said, I'll probably be using it in the next day or two, if not tonight. When something comes up and I'll go, oh, declare with a really intense intention. And I'll go, okie dokie, I could do that.
Very cool. I like that.
Yeah.
That's very, very good. By the way, I realized I have another piece of news to report today. And okay. It's a good piece of news. Today marks the 40th straight day that I've been doing my mirror work. I reached the 40 goal today. That was the original goal that I set. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, I remember when you were like on day 2 or 3.
Yeah.
So this is really cool. Wow.
Yeah, well, especially for me because I've never been very good at sticking to these 30-day plans. In fact, as I think about it, I think this is the first one I actually hit the goal. That's how bad my track record has been.
So can you kind of remind us maybe what state of mind or being you were in when you started and then where you are today and how things have transpired?
Well, let's see. The motive behind doing this was that Cindy had told me about this thing that Jack Canfield did, this mirror work, which I'd heard of before. Other people have talked about that too. But according to Cindy, Jack Canfield reported that after he had done it for, she wasn't sure whether it was a 30-day or a 40-day period, all the negative self-talk had disappeared from his mind and from his subconscious mind both ways. I mean, it just kind of went away. And that's something I'd been battling for years. I said, whoa, I'm willing to try that. I'm not usually good on these 30-day routine things, but I'm willing to give that one a try. So that was where my big motivation came from. Where was I at in terms of my mindset with the negative self-talk? There was a lot of it. Every single day, there was negative self-talk going on inside. And some of it was just self-talk. Some of it was just negative about stuff going on in life. It was always kind of a grumpy talk, even if I was in a good mood, if you can believe that. If I was in a good mood, it would still be going on playing in the background. And
no,
it got pretty annoying.
I
believe
that.
It hadn't gotten pretty annoying. It had been very annoying for like decades. It had been going on for a long, long time. So I was pretty highly motivated to get rid of it. And that got me through the first few days, which were rough. The first day was really rough. I could only do it for 5 seconds, literally. I couldn't do any more than that. I looked in the mirror, I tried to say it, and I just turned away. I couldn't do any more. The second day was a little bit easier. By the fourth day, it was a lot easier. And by that point, I was on a roll, so I just kept going and going. There were a couple days where I thought maybe I was going to miss it. In fact, the first day that I thought I was going to miss it was around, day 12 or something like that. And I was not in a place where there was a mirror, believe it or not. I said, I don't want to forget this because if I don't do this now, I know I'm not going to do it later on. And then I remembered I had my smartphone with me. I can take a selfie. Well, the same camera I can use for taking a selfie, I can talk into the mirror, so to speak. So I used that as my way to do it that day. That was a kind of a breakthrough. And I used that a couple times over the last 40 days. But it just kept going. It just kept going. And the further I got into it, well, now I became determined I wasn't going to break the pattern. I had never gone this far before. I had to see it through, right? And by around day 20, 22, something like that, I noticed that the self-talk hadn't gone away, but it was fading. It was down by like 22, day 24, it was down to like maybe 20% volume compared to where it was before. I thought, well, that's pretty cool. And then somewhere around day 30, I noticed finally it had disappeared altogether. Now, interestingly enough, over the next few days, it actually resurfaced a little bit. But I kept with it, kept sticking with doing the routine, and it went away again. And as of today, it is gone. So I hope it's gone permanently, but if it's not, who cares? I'm just going to keep doing the mirror work. I'm not done.
Well, and I was just going to ask, do you have any inclination at this point as to how long you're going to continue?
I don't have a reason to stop yet.
Oh, good answer. Good answer.
Because, I mean, if it's helped me with this, what else could it help me with?
Right.
I mean, all I know is that Jack Canfield told me that, it eliminates your negative self-talk. Okay, well, it did that much. Could it do more? I don't know.
Well, depending on what school of thought you come from, I've heard that it takes, like, to build a habit. I've heard 21 days. I've heard 30 days. And the one I've heard more recently is 60 days.
Okay.
And I have to say, for me, if there are things that chronically have been a problem, 21 and 30 have never been sufficient for me. And honestly, I never even made it to 60 days, so I didn't like break the habit that way. I found other ways to do it.
Oh.
But I'm with you. I mean, if it's done this much, created this much benefit in 40 days, how much more could it create as you continue?
Oh, yeah. Because when you first start, 40 days seems like a lot. When you finish 40 days, it doesn't seem like much at all, which is really strange. It's very, very strange. It shouldn't be that way, but that's the way our perceptions tend to be. And, now that I've done 40, it's like, well, why not 365?
I remember years and years ago, I went on a 14-day water fast where I ate no foods, had no drink except for water. And really, by the fourth day, I was flying, like, oh, yeah, this is feeling good. And people are like, aren't you hungry? I said, no, not really. And now what was interesting, at that time in my life, I was responsible for doing all the cooking for my family dinner, the family of origin, my parents and my siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, how can you cook and not even be hungry? I said, honestly, that's when I recognized that just taking in the aromas sometimes can actually satisfy the and satiate that feeling for eating.
Really?
So I was just, it was really fascinating. And by the time I was hitting, 11, 12, 13, 14 days, I was a little bit disappointed that it was going to be over, because I loved the amount of energy and stamina I had.
Mm.
My mental acuity was like off the charts.
Really?
Now, back in those days, I wasn't doing it for spiritual reasons. I think if I did today, I'd probably get a whole lot of insight and conversation with my inner being. But back then, that's not where I was at. I literally did it to lose weight, which I don't necessarily recommend, but that's what I did.
Mm.
And so when I broke the fast, I did it the appropriate way, where you do it slow and you do, soothing foods, so that it doesn't upset your digestive system. And I did it the right way. But, by 3 days, I was back to having what I would call a normal appetite. Because in the beginning, the appetite has definitely slowed down. And I was really disappointed on the 17th day, because I was now eating. And I'm like, man, it's almost like those 14 days didn't do anything to change something. I was kind of hoping it would.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what you mean. Once you get going on a roll and you're getting really great benefits.
Yeah.
It's like, I wished I would have said to myself at the time, well, if you're enjoying it so much, keep going. There's not a health reason that I know of that it would hurt me. And I know lots of things about fasting now where it's really a very positive thing. I didn't know that information back then, but I wish I would have kept going and just see if I could have allowed my body to give me the signals of when it was ready to eat again.
Of course, you could still start the thing again if you wanted to.
Yeah, don't have any desire to do it.
Well, there you go. That kills it right there.
Yeah. Well, and so that kind of leads me to a little bit of an update on Project B, which stands for body.
Oh, right. Yeah. So perfect timing.
One of the cool things, last week was I got this affirmation, happy body, happy life.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt really good. And then about 3 days later, I was mentally, I said to myself, I wanted to recite that affirmation to myself. But instead, what came out was, love my body, love my life.
Ooh.
And I went, oh, that's really juicy.
Very
I
nice.
Love that one.
Yeah, it's got a lot of good positive stuff in it.
Yeah. And then yesterday I noticed as I wanted to do it, it was loving my body, loving my life, which is an active verb.
Very nice.
Like, this is cool. Well, now what's been happening with that? I mean, granted, I just told you kind of how my affirmation has been changing up. But I've noticed, because I live in a two-story house, and I purposely go up and down my stairs all the time. I don't wait I'm going to, think of three things I need to do downstairs before I go down there. I made a commitment to myself years ago, because I sit on my butt all day behind a computer,
mm-hmm.
that I need to be active as much as possible. So if the thought even comes to mind of something I want downstairs, I just jump up and I go and I do it. So I don't have a problem going up and downstairs. I don't get winded, that kind of thing, because I've been doing it for a long time. But what I had noticed is when I'd come to the top three stairs, obviously as I'm coming up, I would slow down my pace. And sometimes those last two stairs just felt really laborious. And I asked myself, why am I slowing down? I mean, I know I'm coming to the top, so I don't have to keep racing up. But I went, what would happen if I just kind of kept up my pace? And that's a question I asked a long time ago, and I never really got a good answer.
Oh.
But I noticed since I've been living in the new intention of Project Body, I'm noticing that without conscious effort, I'm racing myself up the stairs, and I'm no longer slowing down when I get to the top.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm noticing how, and for years, for whatever reason, I've held on to the rail, especially if I'm carrying a plate or a drink or something, because one time I spilled a whole plate of barbecue something on my stairs.
Oh,
on my
dear,
carpet,
yeah.
And that was a mess.
Yeah.
So it's I think ever since then, I've been trying to be more careful, but I think I've gone to such the extreme that holding the rail going up the stairs kind of slows me down. And it probably throws off my balance a little bit. And so I've been, without realizing it, or I should say without conscious effort, I'm not using the railing and I'm just kind of like chugging up the stairs, kind of like I'm racing myself.
Hmm.
And I'm like, well, this is kind of cool. It's like my body's having a good time moving a little bit more than it used to. And, you know, I'm just noticing I'm doing more neck rolls and I'm doing more shoulder rolls. And, you know, I'm watching like a, walking like a marching band sometimes when I'm going down the hallway in my, you know, my upstairs. And I'm just kind of noticing different things that my body is doing kind of involuntarily. And I'm really kind of digging it because it feels really good.
I'm going to guess that your energy level is up too.
You know, it definitely has been. As a matter of fact, and I shared this with you the other day, and I'll say it now. One night, I was sitting in a recliner, and I was watching TV, and it was getting later. I normally go to bed around midnight, or I should say I'm usually asleep by midnight. And I need to kind of take a couple hours to wind down because I tend to be so mentally active. I need to like slow down. So that's why I was sitting in the recliner. It was maybe about 9:30 at night. And it was like, okay, time to kind of slow my roll. And I came to a point where I started feeling a little itchy. I don't mean like scratching, but like a little agitated or just jittery or a little, like I wanted to do something. And so I was asking myself, well, what is it I want to do? And I noticed that I had this image of my pantry and my refrigerator. And so I was mentally taking inventory of, is there anything in there that I want to eat?
Ah.
And I caught myself and I'm like, are you hungry? And I got, no. And I'm like, do I need food? No. I'm like, so why am I thinking about food? Well, I kind of know why I'm thinking about food. Food has been an activity that I do when I'm bored or an activity that I do between things.
Sure.
But this time, instead of going down that road, like, well, I'm just bored and I have nothing else to do, I think I'll go eat. I just sat with the feeling and I noticed that a new question kind of came up. And the question was, all right, so if I'm taking inventory of what food's available to me, but I'm not hungry, what is it I do really want to do? Because there's something, you know, I'm paying attention to my feelings and my feelings are ajar. There's something that I want to, something else I want to do. And I didn't ever really get the answer for what it is I really preferred to do. But I had such clarity, I wanted to do something different. And I recognized I was saying to myself, and I don't want to eat.
Good
I know
for you.
That was my first inclination.
That's good.
But I'm like, but I don't want to eat in this moment. And I recognize this is a place I've been many times in my life where it's like I'm sitting at the precipice of making the decision to eat, to not to eat. And this time I decided not to, but instead of just, oh, I'm not going to eat, there was also a huge curiosity of what is it I really desire? What is it I really desire? And I still do not know what it is I really desire, but I do get the sense that it's something that would be very satisfying to my mind and my body both. And it's an activity or something that or a project that I don't currently engage in.
Something
and
new.
So I'm very it's new, and I'm very interested to see what's going to pop up. I mean, there once was a time that when I'd come to the point like, oh, I want to eat because I have nothing else to do and I'm bored, that's when I purposely took up crocheting. And then I made a whole bunch of Afghans. And now I'm at the point, I have like one that I've started. It's maybe a third of the way through. It's like, do you want to work on the Afghan? No. Well, I took up oil painting and I've got all my paints and canvases. Do you want to paint? No, not really. You know, I'm just kind of going through all the list of things I could do. Like, do you want to clean the house? I'm actually one of the strange people that like that. And it's like, no, not really. So I'm like, there is something else that's brewing. Don't know what it is. But I feel like it's being sponsored by my body. Like, brought to you by.
I was just going to say, it sounds like.
What I absolutely know is that ever since the affirmation came, happy body, happy life, things within my body are starting to give me new signals. And I'm enjoying it. It's really fun. And I don't have an expectation of how it's going to happen, what it's going to happen. But somewhere on down the road, and I think the road is probably not as long as I think, losing weight and being more firm and getting in better shape and having a greater sense of vitality is all a part of where what I've set as what I prefer. And so I know that's what's on its way. Because in vibrational reality, it's already done. That much I know.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to throw out my Allman Brothers album because apparently the road doesn't go on forever.
Nope.
I do know it goes on forever, though, or at least it seems to go on forever. And that's our exploration of this book because we take a lot of time. I mean, yesterday, we spent the entire show on the word how. That's as far as we got. Just how.
Well, we started with the word how, and then we spun off in many directions. But as far as the book goes, you're right. We got as far as one word.
How.
How. And so just to let everybody else know, because I thought that was hysterical. Yesterday, when we were kind of debriefing the show about one word, we went, okay, so the second word is am. I wonder if we could do an entire show on the word am.
That shows just what kind of a silly mood we were in, I tell you.
It gets crazy. Very silly. So, unless you have something else you want to share, let's see how far we can go on this. Huh?
Well, I'm going to suggest we go for
it.
I was just going to say, let's go for a sentence, maybe a paragraph.
It could happen. We've done it before.
We've done it before.
We have the skill set. So I'm going to read the chapter heading and I'll let you get into the paragraph.
Oh, okay.
How am I getting what I'm getting?
Well, we're off to a good start. Neither one of us is interrupted, so this is good. Okay.
How am I getting what I'm getting? How am I getting what I'm getting?
There it is. There's the question. So the book says, at first, our insistence that you are the creator of your own reality is met with a joyful acceptance because most people long for the control of their own experience. But as you come to understand that everything that is coming to you is being attracted by your own thought, in parentheses, you get what you think about whether you want it or not, end parentheses, some of you feel uncomfortable with what seems like the overwhelming task of monitoring thoughts, sorting them out, and offering only those that will yield things that you do want. And I can say, yes, that was me, especially very early on.
Well, and you know what? Abraham has talked about this, and I totally remember the time in our history. I mean, this could even be 10 years ago, but the time when this paragraph is what they're really talking about, because even on Oprah, she would have self-help gurus on there and somebody would start talking about something and they'd start to go down a negative road. And in the middle of their sentence, they'd realize they were telling a story they didn't want to come true, or they were talking about something that they didn't want, and they catch themselves and they go, cancel, cancel, cancel.
Cancel, cancel.
Cancel, cancel, cancel. And Abraham is so funny because in workshops, Abraham talked about how people were doing the cancel, cancel, cancel.
Oh, geez.
Cancel thing as if that was going to stop everything, change everything. And I just thought it was funny. So I really think this paragraph is kind of alluding to that time period when people were doing that because they were like, they were so monitoring, because this is what Abraham said, they're so monitoring their every thought and their every word that sometimes words they don't want slip out. And then once they realize it, they like want to suck it back in.
Yeah. Well, actually for me, it was even worse than that because, well, in a sense it was better because I realized right from the get-go, I had too many of them to monitor. I mean, literally, I knew there was no way I was going to be able to monitor them all. I knew that they were going to be spewing out before I even realized they were spewing out. And so actually what I felt was overwhelmed. I felt like there was no way for me to do this task that this whole law of attraction thing was ordering me to do. Or not ordering me to do, but you get the gist of it. So I kind of stayed in that space for the longest time because I didn't know what the answer was. When I finally heard what the answer was, It was a huge sigh of relief, but I don't want to give the plot away, so we should keep reading.
Okay.
It says, "We do not encourage a monitoring of thoughts, for we agree that would be incredibly time-consuming and cumbersome. But instead, we recommend a conscious utilization of your emotional guidance system," which, by the way, we talked about yesterday after we talked about the word how. Now, if you will pay attention to the way that you are feeling, then a monitoring of your thoughts is not so necessary. Whenever you are feeling good, know that you are in that moment speaking, thinking, or acting in accordance with your intentions. And know that whenever you are feeling bad, you are not aligned with your intentions. In short, whenever there is a negative emotion present within you, you are in that moment miscreating, either through your thought, your word, or your action. And so the combination of being more deliberate about what you want, more clear about what you intend, and more sensitive to the way you feel is, in essence, what the deliberative creative process is all about. By the way, that whole last bit there was all in italics, so I think that's their way of saying, this is important, pay attention.
It is. And, you know, I'll say that just based on the experience I was sharing I had earlier yesterday and today with, you know, being frustrated with the help desk, because yesterday I was aware of what I felt. I just kind of chose not to change it. Today I was aware of what I felt, and I did choose to change it. But once upon a time, I was not even aware of how I felt.
Yes.
And when you're not aware of how you feel, you're not really in that space where you can be in deliberate control, because you're kind of living by default. Your emotions, you know, what I was doing is I was letting my emotions just carry me wherever I went. And so whatever circumstances came into my world, you know, based on whoever I talked to or whether the bus was running on time or, you know, whether I made the green light or not, whatever circumstances, that was dictating how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Abraham refers to as living a life by default.
And I really did that. I mean, I lived so much by default, Wendy, that not only would I live with whatever, like you said, I don't remember how you said it, but I lived by whatever my emotions were telling me to feel. Not only was that happening, but it would take me 3 to 4 hours often after the fact before I could look back and say, oh, I was thinking negatively. There was this huge delay in my awareness.
So now I want to tell you, my purpose here is not to top you, but
I have a story
that is so wild, it will top that one.
All right, let's hear it.
So I was so living by default and so not connected to my feelings that when I was in traditional therapy, I think I started when I was like 29, I was in therapy for 4 years, and I would, you know, bring to my therapist, hey, here's what's going on in my life, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, week after week, we'd work on certain things. And one day she just like sat back in her chair with this look of amazement. And she said, Wendy, do you realize that what you're talking about today happened like 2 weeks ago? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, I've noticed that your pattern is that it takes you about 2 weeks for you to feel your feelings.
Wow.
About something that happened 2 weeks ago. Like your feelings are 2 weeks delayed. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. And she goes, that's why it's really like wreaking havoc right now on you. Because now that it's 2 weeks out, it's really not appropriate in certain circumstances to like say to the person who drove you crazy or say to the person who, because of what they said, you know, cause these things going on in you. It's like, you can't right the wrong 2 weeks later, because really you kind of have to do it in the moment. You know, if you want to, in other words, if you want to set a boundary with someone, cause that's what I was working with. You want to set a boundary. You got to do it when they're pushing your boundary. That's when you go, no, stop. I'm not letting you in, whether you physically do it, mentally do it, or say something or not. It's like you set the boundary. While the boundary is being broken, that's the best time to actually make the change. And she goes, but you can't do that if you're not feeling what you feel until 2 weeks later. And I went, wow.
I was just having an image of that. I just had a big image of that. The image was of you actually going, let's say you had a run-in with person X, and 2 weeks later you had the emotional reaction. So you went and found person X, and you got in their face about what the boundary was, and person X is saying, what's she talking about?
Exactly. Exactly. Because we would have had multiple conversations since, you know, the incident. And so to do it 2 weeks later is like out of the blue. And they've already long forgotten about it. And so it doesn't make any sense.
They've completely lost the context.
Yeah, totally. Or a friend of mine would say, you've lost the plot.
You lost the plot, right, exactly.
And so this is where my therapist, love her to death, just love her. She did so much good by me. She said, so here's our new goal. To get you to, instead, like we're starting here where it takes you 2 weeks to have a feeling about something. And the goal is to get you to have the feeling in the moment that the situation is occurring so that you can make a new decision right then and there. And I gotta tell you, that felt like a really big wish that was like on my Santa's wish list.
Yeah.
That almost didn't seem possible because I'm like, well, I don't know how I'm going to make my feelings happen sooner. I don't know, because back then I didn't realize that feelings were actually a part of the guidance system that I now understand. I just thought feelings just happen kind of by chance.
Mm-hmm.
But I really started focusing on the new goal, bringing my feelings into the now moment so I could make a good decision.
Right.
And that felt like a really compelling reason to want to start to tap into feelings sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I would say by the time I left therapy, I was definitely feeling my feelings in the moment I was feeling them, and I could be appropriate in that moment.
Congratulations on the progress. I mean, that was a huge breakthrough.
I was able to say to somebody, hey, this ain't kosher with me. You know, this is not going to go forward.
Right.
But having been through that, first of all, I share it because anybody who listens to me now might be under the misunderstanding that I've always been able to feel my feelings. No. One, I used to not feel them at all, or at least not have the acknowledgement of feeling them. And then two, when I did, it was 2 weeks delayed.
That's what I call a tape delay.
Yeah, very, very tape delay. So,
holy cow.
And hopefully it gives some encouragement that can be changed.
Yeah.
Because I sure changed it. And I really do feel what I feel now in the moment that I feel it. I don't always acknowledge it, but I usually like it when I do because it really works for me.
I know what you mean. Because for me, it's been also a similar kind of thing. I mean, I didn't have 2 weeks to make up. I had a smaller, like a 3 or 4 hour delay. But that still seemed plenty big. And once it started to fill in, the most interesting part has been kind of expressed in the last 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months since I brought you guys on. And during that time period, each of you in various ways was challenging me to pay attention to my inner being. Well, part of that I have now since learned is paying attention to my emotions and paying attention to them in the moment. I've gotten a lot better over the years in paying attention in the moment. And I now end up with emotions that kind of pop up every once in a while that don't make any sense. And I used to just dismiss them. Now I'm paying attention like, oh, I wonder if that's a message of some kind. And I still don't know what the message means. I don't know how to use it. I don't know what to do with it. But at least I'm hearing it. That's improvement.
Oh, yeah. That's huge progress. And eventually all the rest of those things will come.
I certainly hope so, because it does get a little confusing when you get an emotion and you don't know where it came from or why or what its purpose is. So anyway,
I get it.
Moving on to the next subsection. The next one is entitled, I Am the Sole Creator of My Experience. Which, there was a time when I thought that was crazy. Now that seems normal to me. I'm just realizing I've really come quite a ways on this, because when I first saw that, it was, you know, it felt a little foreign. Now it just feels like it's part of my shirt, so to speak. It's really something. Anyway, the paragraphs say, the big question that usually comes up at this point of our discussion is, Abraham, how do I know that what comes forth from within me may be trusted? Isn't there someone greater than I who makes all of the rules and wants me to be or do specific things? And we say, you are the creator of your experience, and you have emerged forth into this physical body through the power of your desire. You are not here to prove yourself worthy of something else. You are not here because you seek greater salvation on some other plane. You are here because you have a specific purpose in being here. You want to be a deliberate creator, and you have chosen this physical dimension where there is time and space so that you may finally tune your understanding and then see the benefits of whatever you have created in thought by allowing it to come into your physical experience. You are adding to the expansion of the universe, and all that is benefits from your existence by your exposure to this experience and by your expansion. And then in italics it says, all that you do pleases that which you seek to please. Interesting phrase. There is not a list of things that are right and a list of things that are wrong. There is only that which aligns with your true intent and purpose, and that which does not. You may trust your guidance that comes forth from within you to help you know when you are in alignment with your state of natural well-being. And I love the fact that this is like wearing a second skin. That's how comfortable this feels, especially since on those rare occasions, and I've learned not to do it anymore, but on those rare occasions where I have a conversation with a disbeliever, usually it's somebody who's very religious, and they get all riled up about this idea that I am a deliberate creator, as if that can only be reserved for God. And the interesting thing, the reason I bring that up at all, is it's gotten to the point now where, well, I don't really want to listen to their stuff anymore, so that's why I don't talk about it to people who I have a sense aren't going to be responsive and receptive to it. But more importantly, I feel really comfortable now with the idea that I'm a deliberate creator. And that, to me, is like a huge step forward. So I'm feeling pretty good about this paragraph, this section.
You know, it's fascinating to me to even realize that part of what was really uncomfortable when I decided to walk away from Christianity was this notion of, or I was sensing like, oh my God, I'm all out here on my own. What do I do now?
Yeah.
Because when I was in Christianity, there was such a strong teaching and belief that God ordains so much of your life. Like, God is the purpose. You are here to worship him. You are here to praise him. You are here to give him glory. You're here to do all these good things, you know, to make him happy. And when you do that, then of course you get to feel the benefit of it. But there were all these, I mean, that was like one aspect. But then let's say there was something where I was trying to decide, okay, I'd like to go to college. Should I go? Should I not go? Is this a good choice? Is that not, you know, is this particular college a good choice for me? And I was always taught through my Christianity that, like, God will let you know if this is the best place for you or not. And, like, I never had to wonder, what if I picked the wrong place? Because somehow God would guide me toward the perfect place. And oh my God, the word perfect was used throughout my entire Christian experience.
Oh, really?
There was the perfect, oh yeah, there's the perfect school for you. There's the perfect timing for you. It's the perfect will of God for you. I mean, there was perfect, 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 perfect. And guess what? I was a perfectionist.
What a shock.
Christianity and, yeah, Christianity and me really went together because my personality was so aligned with perfection.
Yeah.
So when I was no longer relying on Christianity for my life, I kind of felt like I was out in the raw and wild wilderness because I felt like there was no sense of guidance anymore. Now, little did I know that my inner being had been trying to guide me all my life, and I would eventually make that connection so I no longer feel out in the wilderness anymore. However, now, I mean, learning that I am the creator of my reality and everything that comes into my world is my creation, that took on like this huge feeling of responsibility that for a while really felt like too big of a burden to carry, because I was raised in Christianity where I could take on as much responsibility as I wanted, and then I could just go, oh, it's all up to God, And I could shirk responsibility because that's kind of what I did.
Okay.
It was like an all or nothing. But now being my own personal creator and knowing that and living in the truth of that was kind of a very, very big deal. I like it now. I love it now. I love feeling in control of my life. I love knowing that there's nothing outside of me that I have to get permission from or for me to desire what I desire. I don't have to ask a God or my church or my parents or anybody, you know, like, do you think this is the right thing for me to do? Because if I think it's the right thing for me to do, that's all that matters. Because I get to choose everything. You know, I choose, do I want my walls painted purple, red, green, blue, white? Where I promise you, Walt, in the old days, I would have been praying and asking God to show me what the best color would be for me.
No. Oh, dear.
Where now I just go, I want purple. Purple makes me happy. And I painted purple. And I had someone come into my house one time and went, why did you paint your wall purple? And I just looked at him and I went, because I can. And it truly is what felt right to me, because I can. Because I know if I decide I'm tired of purple, I can paint it black if I want.
You can.
I could do splatter paints all over. I could do anything I want because I'm the one who decides what I like.
I have to ask
and
you a question.
Today,
I have to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
The person who said, why did you paint it purple? And you said, because I can. What was their reaction?
It was a really boring reaction, Walt. He just kind of looked and just kind of like shook his head and moved on. But I do remember somehow within, I don't know if I brought it back up or whatever, but, you know, he said, because I said, well, you live in an apartment, right? And he said, yeah. And he goes, all my walls are white. And I said, do you like them as white? And he went, I don't know. They're just white. And I said, well, I've lived in apartments and they were white. And the whole time I was in white walls, I was itching to paint the walls. And he looked at me again. He kind of looked at me like, really? That's something you think about? And I looked at him and I said, really? You don't? And you know what? He used to wear white dress shirts and khaki pants.
Of course.
So I don't, that says it all to me.
Yeah, that's,
but
the,
I'm a very
that's the beige
colorful
look.
I'm a colorful personality.
This is
so
true.
It totally makes sense that I would want colorful walls.
I just think
and
it's
for me.
I'm sorry.
For you, it's what?
I was just going to say, I just think it's funny that the guy who was into white and beige was all over you because you chose purple, but he had no opinion about white or beige.
Yeah, no, those are totally fine for him.
Like,
but, you know,
what?
I mean, I'm in this two-story house. It's pretty big. Every room is painted slightly different. I do have a variation, or I should say I do have a consistency where I have two colors that kind of move throughout my whole house. But every room kind of has its own feel. And I'm very aware that depending on my mood, there are times when I specifically choose a certain room to sit in and I stare at the wall because whatever the vibration is of that color feeds me.
Hmm.
And I'm very aware of color therapy and kind of have been for decades.
Okay.
So that's why color is so important to me. It's not important to everybody.
No.
But I'm very visual. And color means a lot, you know? So,
well, that's
anyway,
cool.
Just a side note on color.
It's a funny story, though.
There was something. Let's see, did I just talk about that? It was something in the last thing. I don't know.
Well, when you think of it, bring it back up. You know, we'll stop and come back if we need to.
Oh, no. I think I touched on it. The point had to do with how some people think that there are certain things in life that are right or wrong inherently.
Mm.
And learning that nothing is right or wrong except you choose it to be so is a very different way of living and thinking from how I grew up. And I really embrace the idea that not only do I get variety, but I get to choose everything.
Oh, I think it's very different from the way we all grew up. I mean, most of us had some aspect of that in our growing up period. And that's why I think that's why I was laughing at the guy who was you know, perplexed by your choice of purple, but he had no opinion about white or beige. Thinking, well, wait a minute. Look, if you're going to say that one preference isn't appropriate, why aren't you going to say why your preference is appropriate? Why aren't you even going to have a preference there?
I know.
It's
I know.
So crazy.
And his cars were always black.
Oh, gee.
Black with beige interior, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So
okay.
This is a guy who didn't know color. He lived in a very neutral palette.
Did he dress in stark colors? Like black and white?
No.
No?
No, no, no. Like white and beige is about as much contrast as he would do. Of course, he had beige furniture. His couch was beige. And
did he disappear into his couch?
He might have.
Okay, so moving on. The next section is entitled, Magnetically, I Attract Thoughts in Vibrational Harmony. And it says, the law of attraction is responsible for much that is obvious in your life experience. You have coined many phrases because of your partial understanding of this law. You say, birds of a feather flock together. You say, the better it gets, the better it gets, and the worse it gets, the worse it gets. And you say, this day started out bad and ended up much, much worse. Well, actually, I don't remember ever saying that one, but okay.
Me neither.
But even
but
as
maybe
you were,
Esther's heard that one.
Maybe that's what it was. Yeah, yeah. But even as you are saying these things, most of you do not truly understand how powerful the law of attraction really is. People are drawn together because of it. Every circumstance and event is a result of it. The thoughts that are vibrationally similar to one another are drawn magnetically to one another through this powerful law of attraction. People who feel a certain way are drawn to one another magnetically through this law. Indeed, the very thoughts that you think are drawn one unto the other until what was once a very small or insignificant and not so powerful thought may, because of your focus upon it, grow to be very powerful. In italics, because of the law of attraction, each of you is like a powerful magnet attracting unto you more of the way that you feel at any point in time.
Well, you know, the part that sticks out to me is the very thoughts you think are drawn one unto another until what was once a very small or insignificant and not so powerful thought may, because of your focus upon it, grow to be very powerful.
Mm.
I have to say that that's what happens for me with this show.
Really?
Yeah. Sometimes I bring up a thought that I don't think is that big of a deal. But as I'm talking about it, it starts to grow. It starts to grow and get more powerful. And then if I continue to think about it after the show, it becomes something really big in my world.
Hmm.
And I start to see manifestation of things, you know, come to me very quickly. So it's interesting how something that you may not even think is a big deal, but if you give it more focused attention, it will grow. And it grows because of the law of attraction, because every 17 seconds, you get another thought that is similar to that which you have been thinking or talking about.
And that is cool. I'm also intrigued by the fact that you're so consciously aware of the growth of the thought as you're talking. I mean, that's a tremendous level of, I guess I'd call it attention to detail. I mean, you're so aware of what's going on with your thought pattern that you can actually notice the thought growing. That's big.
Well, I'm an investigator. I love to take things apart and put them back together, and I'd love to understand how things happen and in what sequence and, you know, what's possible. And so that's part of the intrigue to me about law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a clear and concise set of principles. You know, they're laws, but then they're also principles in order to align with the laws. And I'm just always fascinated by how it actually plays out in our real life. And so, yeah, sometimes even while we're doing the show, I'm paying attention to like, oh my gosh, this thought is growing, like it's swollen. It's so big, you know, where I know when we started talking, it felt not so big.
You got me wanting to make the deliberate attempt to start paying attention to that, because normally I don't. Normally I'm just paying attention to, you know, what are we talking about? What, you know, I'm talking to Wendy. What's Wendy talking about? Where's she coming from on this? You know, I'm looking at all that stuff. I'm never thinking in terms of, is this thought growing? You got me on an entirely new track now. Because I have the same kind of you know, interest that you have. I love, you know, tearing it apart and looking at it and understanding the details to the point where David and Tom look at me cross-eyed, like, what are you doing spending all your time there? Just do it.
No, it's fun. I mean, not everybody wants to go to the places we go to and investigate and pull, you know, get under the hood the way we do. Some people just want the results.
They
just,
oh, yeah,
want, you know, bottom line, just make it happen already.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think, at least for me, that's what makes me a coach, because I love working with someone new and getting under the hood and listening to their story and finding out what their background is and what thoughts are they thinking habitually, you know, because I can almost always map what their problem is that they're presenting to me. And then I start to listen to them talk, and I can always map the two together. I understand exactly why they're getting the results they are, or at least pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be that arrogant that I think I know it all. I just know a lot.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing to know. It's a lot. But what's even more cool, I mean, what you're really talking about there is being a great listener. Because when you're a great listener, you're taking the time to pick all that information up. And to absorb it and to kind of grab the gestalt of it, or grab the feel of the whole thing. And that's what you do. When you do that, you get all kinds of cool insights. So more kudos to you. That makes you a better coach.
Well, and you know, every one of us has the ability to do that with anybody we come in contact with. I even do it with television shows or the news or documentaries or where anybody's talking about anything. I know this may sound bizarre, but I believe that television shows, even when there are script writers, actually write very realistic things in terms of how people really do respond. And the thought process behind it is still, it mirrors how we live our life.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you see somebody on TV and they get some kind of result that they're really not liking, you can almost always, at least I can, I pay attention to what they've been talking about throughout the show. And I know how they landed where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the same thing happens not just with network TV, because the younger generation doesn't even hardly watch that anymore. But now it's like Netflix and BritBox and YouTube and all that good stuff. And the same things happen there. In fact, you see it. I don't spend a whole lot of time on any of those media, but what little time I do, every once in a while I'll spot something and I'll say, oh, that's where that cultural thing comes from, because it really does play out in reality. The stuff that gets created online for these new media gets played out in real people's lives regularly.
Well, and you know, when you and I are like popping into the Law of Attraction Facebook group that we do, they might even present one sentence. And sometimes even the way they present the sentence, which is the problem, gives you the insight as to how it is that they're having that problem. Because we leave clues constantly.
Mm.
We leave them by what we say, by what we do, how we move our body, what our beliefs are. I mean, we give away everything. But what I find fascinating is not many people recognize the actual clues that are being expressed. You know, so like if I'm watching two people talk, or like if I'm doing couples counseling, I'm watching them talk and I'm going, okay, I see what the problem is here. I see what the problem is here. And they don't see it at all. Mm. They don't even realize that what each other is saying to the other one is giving away all the clues, that if they knew how to read the clues, they wouldn't be asking me for help.
Right. Oh,
they
yeah.
They see everything they need to know.
Yeah. That's true. Well, we are sadly out of time. Once again, we run through these hours like they're, you know, sugar going into the tea or something. But hey, it's been great. Let's do it again tomorrow. What do you say?
I'm going to be here.
I will be as well. And we hope you join us too here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye now.